Up here I have different artifacts explaining. Some of them are alien metals that have been produced both on this planet and the confines of outer space that are now used in all stealth aircraft.
It's hard to tell people that our advancement in technology is so far ahead of what they know about that what they think is magic is actually real. And what they can do is project a flying object like a Boeing 767 and project light, sound, everything it needs for people to believe that that was a Boeing 767 going at 300 miles an hour across the tops of the buildings and hitting the World Trade Center.
You are listening to an episode of Jerry Pippin's Conspiracy Hour. And now, your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Conspiracy Hour. I thought that we would start off today's show with a short list of known and proven conspiracies. A lot of people think conspiracies don't exist. Well, we have news for you. We can run down a list here, and we could add a whole lot more than these if we wanted to.
This is an NBC News bulletin. Shots were fired near President Kennedy in Dallas. Here is a report from Robert McNeil, NBC News, with the presidential party in Dallas.
Several shots were fired as President Kennedy's motorcade passed through downtown Dallas. Crowds screamed and lay down on the grass. As the motorcade went by, police broke away and began chasing an unknown gunman across some railroad tracks. It was not known if the shots were aimed at the president. Repeat, it is not known if the shots were aimed at the president. This is Robert McNeil, NBC News, in Dallas, Texas.
And here is a flash from the Associated Press in Dallas. The Associated Press reports that the president was seriously wounded. This is not confirmed. This is a flash. Repeat, this is a flash from the Associated Press in Dallas. They report that the president was seriously wounded by an assassin's bullets.
The Kennedy assassination is probably the best-known conspiracy, but there were many others, many involving assassinations. We'll have more about the Kennedy assassination later in this monologue. But first, let's talk about the other assassinations. Multiple plots to assassinate Fidel Castro. Remember that? Let's talk about proven conspiracies. Operation Northwoods. We've talked to Jim Mars about that a lot. You remember what that was about? Operation Northwoods is very similar in many ways to 9/11. It involved an aircraft being hijacked and the passengers killed and blown up. And actually, there was no such thing. No hijacking and an empty airplane. Go to, you can look up Operation Northwoods, and we'll probably do a show about that along the line. There have been several Freedom of Information Acts released documents that have laid out a pretty incredible story. Then, of course, there's the JFK assassination. And if you want a real conspiracy, you don't have to go very far there. All you have to do is read the church committee's report, and it's hair-raising. So anyone that says that the official government of the United States didn't look at the assassination of JFK in a different view than the Warren Commission, they forgot about the church committee. Then there's the Gulf of Tonkin incident, in which most of the Vietnam War was escalated because of an incident that never happened. All you have to do is read the Pentagon Papers to understand that. Then there's the Robert Kennedy assassination. We've done several shows about that, and we'll be doing some more. A lot of evidence that the LA police just ignored the fact that there were many bullets around, and more than one shooter, probably. And Sirhan, probably mind control. Then there's the assassination of Carlos Allende and many other people around the world who have been assassinated by the CIA Another conspiracy theory was our effort to overthrow the Chilean government. We can thank Henry Kissinger for that. And then, of course, oh yes, there was the Iran-Contra arms for hostage deal. And exactly what happened there, a lot of evidence that Iran cooperated with the Reagan people to make sure he got elected over Jimmy Carter. Oh, now we're getting into current history. Well, not so current. It's been a long time now since the Bush administration falsified the Iraqi WMDs and that information. Weapons of mass destruction never existed. So we fought a war. Thousands of troops died over a fraudulent conspiracy to involve us in combat. And evidently, just to make a lot of money. Well, there was some evidence that Saddam Hussein had some, or at least we said he did, but we neglected to mention that those missiles, weapons of mass destruction, the biological weapons, all of it had a little stamp on it, made in the USA. For instance, those sarin gas shells that he used in the Iraqi-Iran war also had that stamp on it, made in the USA. And then, oh yes, as long as we're mentioned about Iran, we've got computer reports from the CIA saying that they are developing nuclear weapons. They may be, but there's some evidence that a lot of that's been falsified. For instance, there was a nondescriptive holding tank that we cited as proof of an Iranian effort to get an A-bomb. And talking about that, why shouldn't Iran have an A-bomb? Everyone else in the whole world seems to have one. 4, 5, 8, maybe 100 or even more. Russia and Ukraine, at least 1,000. That's old stuff without about 20% reliability. But what that means is you got a 4 out of 5 chance that it may go off someplace else if they had to use them. They're still around and still activated. One thing we haven't talked too much about is they have a way to deliver these nuclear weapons now. It's called a Satan rocket, appropriately. Then there's China, an estimated low of 52 online ICBMs to a high and still building of over 100 and counting. And Anthony Sanchez of the Scepter Radio Network has done a lot of evidence and revelations about an underground base. In fact, several, all tied together in China with lots of supplies and a way to support life for a long time. Now, what's that all about? Then we can move on to other people who have atomic weapons: India, Pakistan, North Korea, South Africa, Israel. Israel has over 200. Some of them are aimed at Europe. And then there's France. They have over 200 as well. Some in France are aimed at the United States and Russia and the European Union. Now, France is our ally, but their nuclear industry helped China build atomic and H-bombs, as well as North Korea and Pakistan. England has 200. We're not sure where they're pointed. And, of course, there's a hostess with the mostess, and that's the good old United States of America. What would we call that? The nuclear arms race conspiracy? Now we have a new conspiracy surfacing today. Evidently, 4 United States soldiers were plotting to assassinate Barack Obama, the president, and overthrow the government. A court in Georgia has heard prosecutors lay out the evidence. Prosecutor Isabel Pauley said on Tuesday that the group had already spent $87,000 on guns and bomb-making materials, and they were plotting to take over Fort Stewart in Georgia. They planned to bomb targets in Savannah and also Washington, D.C., as well as assassinating the President of the United States. So who says there aren't conspiracies? If you look closely, they're everywhere. And, of course, we haven't mentioned the corporate conspiracies. They're everywhere, too. Remember British Petroleum and the fiasco in the Gulf? Lots of cover-ups there. And we haven't mentioned the Japan nuclear disaster, either. So as far as cover-ups and conspiracies, They're not only in the government in official capacity, but in some of our major corporations, they try to cover things up as well. We could go on and name other conspiracies as well. And on this show, the Conspiracy Hour, we intend to cover all of them this season as we go week to week. Let's get back to the JFK assassination. It's hard to believe, but we're coming up on the 50th anniversary. A lot of people were not alive when it happened. So I thought it would be appropriate for us to give you the details by simply playing the audio of this television report from a local television station who was reading the United Press International bulletins. White House correspondent Miriam Smith got the scoop on that ahead of everybody else. And he was in the press bus, jumped off the bus, ran over to a payphone. Remember, there were no cell phones back in those days. So let's listen. You can hear the announcer grabbing his lavalier mic, goes around his neck, and he's holding it and talking into it as he interrupts this program in daytime television.
And very often you'll find a zipper hidden in the arm.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You'll excuse the fact that I'm out of breath, but about 10 or 15 minutes ago, a tragic thing, from all indications at this point, has happened in the city of Dallas. Let me quote to you this, and you'll excuse me if I am out of breath. A bulletin. This is from the United Press from Dallas. President Kennedy and Governor John Connally have been cut down by assassin's bullets in downtown Dallas. They were riding an open automobile when the shots were fired. The president, his limp body carried in the arms of his wife, Jacqueline, has rushed to Parkland Hospital. And if you'll excuse me if I give some directions and we talk about what we're going to do here for the next few minutes, but Bobby, let's tape this, if you please, particularly the interview with the eyewitness people. It is being taped. Good. Here's a piece of copy that was rushed to me and was torn off from the United Press in Dallas. President Kennedy has been shot in Dallas, Texas. He was shot as a motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed the president. She cried, oh, no, as the motorcade sped on. An Associated Press photographer, James Algens, 8LTGENS, reports he saw blood on the president's head. The AP man said he heard two shots but thought someone was shooting fireworks until he saw the blood on the president.
The JFK assassination? We have several shows planned about that. But right now, in this hour, we're going to move forward. After the break, a little later in the show, we'll take a look at 9/11. We're going to do that every week because we feel that we can prove 9/11 was an inside job. We once again do our plea that we do every week. If you are a person who has some inside information, maybe you were doing your job at the time, and now in hindsight, over a decade later, you begin to figure out exactly what happened. If you have a story to tell, contact me at Jerry@JerryPippin.com. This 9/11 crime, and it was a crime, will only be uncovered if we can find some people to talk who were involved. Hopefully, they'll come forward. But we have plenty of information about 9/11 and other things as we continue with the Conspiracy Hour. I'm Jerry Pippin. Tales of High Strangeness. Jerry Pippin's Parazone. Check out our stories of the horrific, the interesting, the spiritual on the paranormal pages of JerryPippin.com.
Scepter Radio Network. Internet radio uncensored, unconstrained, and unleashed. Where sometimes the questions are more dangerous than the answers. And now, your host, Jerry Pippin.
Welcome back to the show. I want to follow up on 9/11 a little bit. If you were listening to the episode before this one, you heard us talk to a lady by the name of Elizabeth Nelson, and she was an eyewitness to a shoot down of Flight 93. Or at least she thinks that's what she saw. If you haven't heard that episode, it's on the archives at Scepter Radio, and it's also on JerryPippin.com under the conspiracy files. I urge you to listen to it.
I want to follow up on the testimony of Elizabeth Nelson, a young woman who was a PFC at the time of the shootdown of Flight 93, which she confirms in an interview with Project Camelot's Bill Ryan. We've been in contact with Bill Ryan. He is in Switzerland right now, but he did send me an email this morning. He writes this, as he says, I am willing to stake my reputation on the fact that this woman is recalling her actual experiences to the best of her ability. I have spent time with her, and I am 100% certain she is telling the truth as best as she remembers. The second thing I want to talk about is a posting on a blog that occurred on Friday, April 11th. The name of the blog is George Washington Blogspot. I'm going to read part of it now. Quote, I am an Air Force veteran. I was serving at Langley Air Force Base, Virginia on September 11th, not to be confused with CIA headquarters at Langley, Virginia. The alert squadron of four F-16 Falcons were also stationed at Langley Air Force Base. The planes were scrambled after the plane crashed into the Pentagon. Because of my position as a ground equipment mechanic, I had access to the flight line operations that day. My friends were crew chiefs and weapons loaders, among other professionals on the flight line that day. One of my unusual duties that day was to drive a loader, a personal friend, along with a rack of live missiles, AIM-9s and AIM-120s, across the active runway to the alert squadron and drop them off. I was towing equipment to the flight line, so when it was time to go back and pick up the loader, I was unable to do so. But another member of my flight group, a good friend and later roommate, did go. According to my roommate, and I later confirmed this with the loader was completely silent most of the trip back to our side of the base. But after they crossed the active line, he spoke. They shot one down. JJ replied, What? The loader. One of those 16s came back with one less missile than when it left. That was all. That's all he said. As they pulled back to the squadron area, the loader was whisked away by his commanders for debriefing. I didn't see him for a few days, but when I did, he said he couldn't talk about it, but he confirmed that what my roommate had told me was true. The U.S. Air Force shot down Flight 93. I haven't told this to many people. I told my parents and other family members after I left the military. They didn't believe it. I figured no one else would either. I kept my mouth shut. Everyone was dedicated to the president and to the country. And anything that went against the official media-delivered story was viewed as unpatriotic. I knew that I loved my country, so I kept my mouth shut. But I just can't do that anymore. I know that I don't have any documents to prove it, and I have no way of knowing where the others who were involved are these days, so I can't prove anything. All I have is my word, and with God as my witness, that is the truth. I am sure that there's lots of people out there with similar experiences, with the Twin Towers in New York, at the Pentagon, and here with Flight 93. That's one of the reasons we're doing this show. We solicit listeners who think they may have something, regardless of how small, of a detail or an item, to please contact me and talk to me about it. Either email me at jerry@jerrypippin.com, or you can call me on the phone, 918-682-2630. We're doing this series because we know the truth is out there. Before we get to our guest for this show, there's something else I want to cover. The thermite story. A group of respected scientists who had access to samples of the particles, the dust, and the granules of the material left on the street after the implosion of the Twin Towers and Building 7 in New York on September 11th finally have released their report. The report turned out to be just as it had been rumored to be, nanothermite. a derivative of the explosive which is used to cut through steel at 2,500 degrees. It's also used as an explosive. Nano means very small particles. Nanotechnology is fairly new. Not many people know how to use it. Certainly, members of the United States government do. We have posted on our 9/11 page a link to the complete report. This is something I would urge you to read, especially if you're scientifically inclined. Plus, we have a link to Denmark TV and an interview with one of the scientists who was involved in the study. Don't worry, it has English subtitles, and I would urge you to watch it. I received a note from Gordon Novell, the infamous private detective, who is a consultant for our 9/11 series. Novell thinks this report is the loaded gun, not a smoking gun, but a loaded gun. He thinks this is what is needed to get a criminal investigation going on 9/11. I hope he is right, but it appears from whatever reason that nothing has been done in the past, and we thought we've had a lot of evidence before. In my opinion, and the opinion of many others, what is needed is a real criminal investigation where people are under oath and are questioned about all of this. Let's hope the authorities do get interested. Coming up next, we have Paul Cross, a well-known actor, movie director, and writer, who was at the Pentagon the day of the attack, September 11th, 2001. What Paul saw that day caused him to do his own personal investigation into the events, and the results is a dynamic docudrama about a major who first went along with the story, the cover story, and later, a guilt of conscience, or maybe it was his patriotism, got the best of him, and he challenged the authorities on the story. The name of the film is Severe Visibility. Stay tuned. I think you'll find this interview fascinating. This is Jerry Pippin, and we're investigating 9/11. You know, when we pause for a commercial, it's always for somebody who pays the freight, pays the way. Well, I'm going to take time out to talk about somebody who can't pay their way. And that's the stray animals, dogs and cats and other animals, who need your help. And there is a way to help them. Support no-kill animal shelters. It's a gift of life that keeps on giving. These animal shelters are located around the world and maybe in your neighborhood. Animals, they need love. They don't need to be sent someplace and then executed just because they don't have a home. Support the animal shelter that is a no-kill shelter near you. Give them a donation of $10, $25, $50 or more. The money will be well used. The animals will love you for it. So give a gift of love. A gift of life to that stray dog or cat.
Scepter Radio Network. Internet radio uncensored, unconstrained, and unleashed. Where sometimes the questions are more dangerous than the answers. And now, your host, Jerry Pippin.
In a minute, we're going to bring on Paul Cross, a good actor and a good director, and also a producer. He produced a film about the Pentagon in 9/11, and basically because Paul was there, he saw it happen. He saw what everyone said was an airplane hit the Pentagon. Paul didn't buy it right off the bat. We'll talk about that in a moment. But, you know, the press, and Paul and I have been talking about this off the air, the press just doesn't seem to want to buy into the 9/11 conspiracy at all. I mean, the conspiracy that really happened, not the government conspiracy. For instance, I want to play something here. Jim Lehrer of PBS was on the Diane Rehm show on public radio, and a caller asked him about 9/11. And Lehrer would have nothing to do with anything but the official story. Here, listen.
All right, let's go to Barbara in Devine, Texas. You're on the air. Wow. Thank you very much for taking this particular call.
Certainly.
You're wonderful. He talks about checking, fact-checking, how important that is. And the New York Times and sometimes the Wall Street Journal do give us facts that others don't. But it seems to me they spend an awful lot of time obliterating facts that are really important, that wars turn on. For instance, I unfortunately have to tell you I'm a 9/11 truther. Why did three buildings go down exactly as they were professionally demolished? One wasn't even hit, and nobody asked any serious questions. The explanations we were given just weren't sufficient. There were no photographs. No planes were called up to intercept for 1.5 hours. There is a website. It's 500 people who are military brass, government officials, engineers, airline pilots, survivors, and they're all seriously questioning the official story. I don't think they're all crazy.
All right, Barbara, thanks for calling. And Jim, I know many, many people feel, as Barbara does, that they never got the whole story. I've not let.
I'm sure there are. I don't happen to be one of them. But I would say to Barbara, I've been to Divine, Texas, so we do share that. The reporting that I have seen on that day and since as part of my professional life, I do not share the skepticism that I know that Barbara and others feel.
As you can see, Paul, Jim's just not buying it, and he's not the only reporter I've talked to. Many people in a position to know a lot better than I am get a lot more answers than I do. They just can't, you know, accept what we're talking about here. By the way, I wrote Jim Lehrer's publicist, and she got back to me rather promptly and said Jim would love to do an interview about why he believes that way, but he's busy on his book tour, so we'll give him a break. I offered to talk about the book. Anyway, Paul, speaking of writing, I guess you star in this, you write in it, it's your project. Is that right?
I did. I wrote the film and starred in it and directed it.
So let's get back to your documentary here, your docudrama. I guess it's really a piece of fiction, as you said. When we talk about your characters and why you wrote it, tell me a little bit about, flesh out the story for our audience.
He's damaged goods. What I wanted to write, a character that was a reflection of the American people. And I know I made him very quirky. He was damaged from the Vietnam War because he despises killing and he doesn't understand the principle behind it. But yet he's extremely patriotic and supports his country and doesn't believe his country would ever do anything to harm its people. Well, the event happens on 9/11 at the Pentagon. He's there. He's a major in the Army, working for the Army. He's not on active duty. He's an accountant. He's a bookworm. And he works in the Pentagon. And he was standing by the window when the event happened. And a buddy of his was killed. And that triggered reaction about when he was in Vietnam. He had some buddies killed, and they believed in the war. They wanted to be there, and they wanted to fight, and they believed that it was the right thing to do, but they never came back. They got killed, but Stanley, my character, who didn't believe in the war but went to fight as a patriotic duty, he thought, came back alive, and he was the one who was against the whole thing. So he had a little guilt complex altogether about that. And then 9/11 happens. A buddy of his is killed in the blast, and he's not, and yet he was standing by the window, and he just can't figure out why he didn't see this big plane coming towards him. So he goes about his business. He writes his memos in a diary that he keeps with Thomas Jefferson, and he explains to Thomas Jefferson everything that's happened that day, but he just can't understand why he didn't see the plane coming. He goes back to his psychiatrist, which he had been to prior to this, on problems of his marriage falling apart because of his mental breakdown from the Vietnam days. So he tries to discover why he didn't see the plane. He wants to prove his own sanity to himself, that he's not going crazy again, because he saw no evidence of a 757 hitting that building. In the meantime, a British reporter gets a hold of him, and the British reporter has done his homework prior to contacting Major Stanley Kruder, my character. And he tries to get me to open up about what I saw, and I don't want to talk about it. And he says, well, you need to talk about it. He said, I've discovered all kinds of things that have happened that day. He says, please meet with me. So we finally meet in his hotel room late, like 4 o'clock in the morning, and he explains to me everything he's found out, and I don't want to believe him, so we have an argument. And then I come around a little later, realizing that everything he's been telling me, when I research it, is the truth, that the government has been lying to us. So that sets him on a path to, first he was out to prove his sanity to himself. Then he goes out to prove to himself that the government didn't lie about it, that this reporter from Great Britain is a nutter. And then he finds out he's not a nutter, and then he decides, what do I do about the information that I have in my possession? And I won't tell any more because it'll give it away.
Well, Paul, we understand that part of it. Tell me, in the creative process when you were putting this thing together, the film, did you get a chance to talk to anybody about your theory, your hypothesis about there not being a plane, at least not a 757?
I didn't tell anybody.
Okay.
That is, I kept it a secret. I wouldn't give the script out to anybody. There's, I think, like 80 actors in the film, and no one was allowed to read the script. I didn't care how big their part was. I didn't allow them to read it. I gave them just what we call in the film business,
sides.
It means you're part of the script, mm-hmm. your scenes. So I gave each character their scenes to obviously learn, and then they came to the set and they did their scenes. But it was a big puzzle to most of them. They had no idea what the film was about. I didn't want to tell anybody because I was afraid that it would get out, and I didn't want someone stopping me, frankly. I was paranoid.
Okay, so you were able to pretty well keep the content under wraps while you were filming it. But later on, you had to, as we say, shop the documentary, I imagine, to distributors and people like that. So the word got out. I guess what I'm really asking is, did you get any interference from the United States government?
I know, well, I do know that the film has been mentioned on the Pentagon's website and a few other military websites. I personally have seen it myself.
What do they say?
They just mentioned the fact I have never read anything where they have discredited the film or me.
Well, the reaction of the Pentagon itself to the film, I think, is very interesting. You know, a lot of people at the Pentagon have top-notch, top-gun military experience. I mean, they would, you would think, recognize a fraud right off the bat.
Oh, of course.
A strange fact, and I believe I'm correct on this, no one in the Air Force was killed in the attack on the Pentagon. Just the other services, mainly the Army.
Well, there are, what's also really strange is the list of the people, it's too foggy for me to really give you details about this. I would suggest anybody listening to look up the passengers on Flight 77. And I also always like to add in any interviews that I do that my heart goes out to any of the family members and friends of any of all the victims. And I don't mean to make light of their demise at all, not in the slightest. I spent many, many, many days after the event crying about it, thinking of all these people's lives who were lost.
One of the passengers was Barbara Olson, a strong Bush supporter.
I know, yeah, that's a very strange story. I mean, everything she did that day, or that was reported that she did aboard the plane to her husband, the telephone calls.
We're talking about Ted Olson, the Solicitor General, during the Bush administration.
I'm sorry. Yeah, right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the, so...
His story's changed a couple of times. At first he said it was a cell phone. Later he said she called through the Justice Department switchboard.
And if it was a cell phone, you know, there's I've read where it was virtually impossible cell phone.
That's true. That's true.
And if she used the phone on the plane and she said she didn't have a credit card, the phones, I'm told, were only you could only use them and activate them as if only if you used a credit card.
Well, I hadn't heard that about the credit card. I mean, she could have any credit card she wanted, I'm sure.
Well, according to her, she didn't have any. According to what he said, what I've read that he said,
mm-hmm.
That she was using a credit card, but yet she said she didn't have a credit card. So, I mean, it's all contradictory. Nothing makes any sense whatsoever.
Anyone else on that passenger list that caught your interest?
Yeah, very much so. The passenger list was very fascinating in regard to... I really shouldn't be spouting this off because I'm not sure because I'd forgotten most of it because there's so much to remember about this day. But the people on the plane were... there were military people aboard the plane, and they were like scientists or something. They weren't your average Joe, like my character who was working in the Pentagon. These were people that were extremely highly intelligent and in very sophisticated technological jobs. But it's definitely worth a perusal on the internet to see for yourself the passenger list because it's kind of fascinating. There's, you know, Flight 93, which is another movie that should be made, because according to the eyewitnesses that were there after the event when they went to this, what someone called just a big pit full of garbage, and I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings whose family members think that their family members were in there, but they weren't, according to even the coroner. Who got to the site, and after a half an hour, he said, "Well, my job's done here." So there isn't even any blood.
As you know, the show just before this one, we found a lot of information out about Flight 93. We have two people, enlisted people in the military, that say that Flight 93 was shot down. One was on the flight line. And the jets scrambled, and they had missiles, and four jets came back, only three missiles. And then we have the testimony of the PFC at Fort Meade, where she was pressed into duty to be a gopher, and these high-level officers were ordering 93 to be shot down because it wasn't answering his radio signal.
Flight 93, to me, is as fascinatingly of a mystery as Flight 77. And, of course, they immortalized the story with those two films that came out, which, you know, they were beautifully done, but they do not tell the truth.
Well, I can see those movies being made with the official U.S. government conspiracy line and the movie producers not even be in on it. It's a good story. I don't think it's true. I think that plane was shot down.
Oh, obviously that plane did not crash there.
You know, the story about the box cutter knives, that really started with Barbara Olson.
Oh, did it?
I mean, that's what her husband said, that she told him that the hijackers had box-cutter knives. Did you know that?
It, you know, the mystery is what happened to those planes. Now, I won't go into what I say in the movie, what happens to those planes, because it's very involved, and when I was researching this film...
But you do have an answer in the...
I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew as a filmmaker, as a screenwriter, I had to answer those questions. I didn't want the audience coming out saying, gee, they didn't cover this important thing here, you know, they left that out because they didn't have an answer to it. But yet I didn't want to give them the answers. My objective in this film, basically, Jerry, was to to make them aware something is wrong and to go research, to go start asking questions. Because I don't tie this up in a nice ribbon at the end of the film and hand it to the audience and say, okay, here's what happened. You know, it's left up for speculation, and you have to come out of there thinking, because when I was writing the film and doing the research, with so much, it was voluminous, the amount of information that I was finding that was literally fascinating, fascinating. And I thought, you know, I couldn't invent this story. No writer could. It's impossible. It's bigger than life. It's just ridiculously involved and intricate. And I had stacks and stacks of research. And I looked at this and I said, how in the heck am I going to make a feature film out of that? Because I know that in a feature film, you cannot throw too much information at the audience. You will lose them. And I could not afford to lose them. The story was too important. I had to keep them with me at all times. So I had to leave out a lot of things that I wanted to put in because there simply wasn't enough room. Brevity is the most difficult thing about writing a screenplay anyway. So, but I did know that I had to somehow or other give an explanation of, okay, if Flight 77 didn't hit the Pentagon, where is it? If Flight 93 didn't crash in Shanksville, where is it? I had to touch on it, you know. So I did, and I sort of get around it in a roundabout way with with the character of Andrew Porter, who is a reporter. He says, I'm not sure about this, and then he goes into the explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And when he explains everything to me, it comes to life, you know. And so the audience doesn't sit and watch this man just talking to me. We see the event reenacted on film. So we reenact whatever he's talking about what happened to these, his theory about what happened
theory
to
theory in your movie about what happened to those planes. I have my own theory. Do you feel comfortable with your theory?
I feel comfortable with it as one scenario that's feasible.
It's a possible, but
there are other ones as
mm-hmm.
well. I would simply love to know where those planes are and where are those people.
Well, there have been reports on the internet that a couple of those planes are still flying.
Exactly, exactly. I know, I've read that too. That's another one of their blatant things that they just throw at you. I mean, the call number of the planes are the same as the ones that were supposed to have been crashed.
I'm pretty certain that they're all dead, and I think all of the passengers, you know, it was very light, all of the passenger loads that day, which right there is something unusual.
That's right. That's right, because if I'm not mistaken, and I don't think I am, those planes were all very empty that day. And
yes, they were.
The amount of passengers on all four planes would have fit onto one plane.
Right.
I think it landed in Ohio or Pennsylvania someplace. It loaded everybody up. And I have a theory about it. As you know, I've talked about it on this radio show, and they fly over a controlled airspace and get shot down by other people who are just doing their duty.
Yeah, because there's been too many reports about those planes, one of the planes landing in Dayton, Ohio, I believe it was, and the passengers got off and were put onto another plane. The thing is, there are people all over this country that have very pertinent information about what they saw that day. I'm sure there are people in, say that one of the planes did land in Dayton, Ohio.
Right, or Reading, Pennsylvania, or wherever.
And then they put those people onto, say all four planes landed at some airport, and they were all put onto one plane. It was very simple to tell them they had mechanical difficulty.
Sure.
And that they needed to change planes. Who's going to question it? Nobody. Nobody's going to say, you know, what do you think? They're all going to think it's the real McCoy. So there are people probably who saw all this happening who after, oh, wait a minute, I remember this, that, and the other thing. That's, you know, put all those pieces together and you've got the answer to this huge mystery. But those people have probably come forth, but no one's listening to them. And no one has contacted me. That's what kind of surprises me.
On every one of these 9/11 shows, I always give my phone number and my email address and urge someone to contact me if they have any inkling that their information might be valuable. So I'm going to do it okay now, Paul, if it's okay for you. 918-682-2630. That's my number. 918-682-2630. Or jerry@jerrypippin.com by email. Now back to the movie. This is a tough road to hoe with a DVD, but you're doing a good job. We're doing everything we can to get the word out. I'd love to see that thing in big distribution.
It's a tough road. I'm doing pretty well with it because of people like yourself who are intelligent patriots of this beautiful country and don't want to see it happen again. I mean, I think the non-patriots are the people who put their head in the sand. That's what I think. Anybody who really loves this country and wants to see it be as brilliant as it is and can be and don't want to see anything happen to it. So it's people like yourself who are helping me, and it's
extremely
appreciated.
We talked about the media's reluctance to address this issue. Another thing that really puzzles me is the politicians. None of the political people want to get involved, evidently. They just don't want to talk about
this.
They don't. They don't want to talk about it because, and I'll give you a small little story. My girlfriend and I were at a screening that Oliver Stone was at. And my girlfriend went up to Oliver Stone. And I was right behind her. I did not talk to him, but she did. She said, Mr. Stone, she said, we have a feature film on 9/11, what really happened. And he said, get away. He said, no more conspiracy stuff for me. And I was shocked to hear him say it because I thought he would be someone who would be dedicated to telling the truth. And then I saw his World Trade Center film. And man, did he sell out. And I love this guy. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant director.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what happened there.
I'm not either. I don't quite get it. I think maybe he took too much heat for JFK, which was a masterpiece in my opinion. And I think he took so much heat for that, that it probably harmed him mentally and career-wise maybe even. I don't know.
Well, Paul, nobody's trying to educate me. And maybe not you. I guess maybe they don't figure we're big enough fish. You know, you got a DVD out there. It's not in, national syndication or anything. I'm on the internet. Who knows?
Yeah, I suppose that's their logic with me, is that the guy's not big enough to educate. But the guy might not be as big as Oliver Stone, but he definitely has a very big message.
Yes, you
and
do.
It is out there. I mean, it wasn't easy. I'll tell you, it wasn't easy. And it was made with all the intentions of getting it out there so it wouldn't happen again.
You put a lot of energy into this one,
Paul. I fear the most is it happening again.
Well, it could happen again. They're brazen enough to try it again. In fact, that may be their undoing. I think it would be. I think most people have wisened up. Just not a lot about the 9/11 story that is logical.
That's right.
Doesn't play out very well, as you know.
That's right. Exactly why they did it.
Some of this, if it were a fiction piece and we had handed it out, and I guess it is a fiction piece in a way, but and nobody would publish it or make a movie out of it because it's not logical. Too many loose ends. Just follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see why they did it. A lot of people got rich, and they didn't have to know about the original project exactly. But you get a lot of allies if all of a sudden what you're doing is making them a lot of money. We've seen that on the stock market. Well, the war made a lot of money for people. Big budgets, privatization of everything, independent contractors getting lots of money. It's a mess. You know, we talk about the defense budget and the war, but just the airport security alone. Look at that.
I know. It is so ridiculous what they put you through.
It's
making
ridiculous.
You take off your shoes.
Lots of money going for nothing.
Yes, it does. And they treat you like garbage, by the way, these airports.
Yes, they do.
They're not polite. They act like you are a definite threat to society. I mean, just not me, but everybody. They treat everyone very rudely, and I don't know who gives them the right to do this. And they're not keeping anybody any safer whatsoever.
I don't think so.
Because they just simply, I mean, I've seen reports on some of these talk shows like 60 Minutes and these other journal shows where they've done experiments where they've actually gotten things through the magnetometers and through the checkpoints. So these people are not doing a very good job, even if they were trying to save the world with what they do. They're really inefficient. And I have flown all over the world, and I'm telling you, it's just an absolute.
How is it in other countries?
It's pretty bad. I can't say it's as bad as it is here. Excuse me. But it is bad. But there are, like, for example, I was in Naples, going to a film festival, passing through Naples, and they don't make you take off your shoes there. You have this thing you stand on with your shoes on, and it determines whether or not there's anything in your shoes that shouldn't be, but you don't have to take them off and put them in a little tray and have them pass through while you're walking around. Right after 9/11, I had to make a trip to France for the other documentary that I had made on the musical theater. So I had to actually leave Washington in the middle of my post-production around October and fly back to Los Angeles, get my passport, then fly from here to France. And it was about a month after 9/11. And they were harassing groups of old people who were on tours, going on a cruise or something. I mean, people my mom's age, putting them through all this. And not only was it ridiculous, but they were Caucasian. They didn't fit a profile of a terrorist. And I thought to myself, where is the logic in this? What are these people doing? And I heard Barbara Walters say on TV that they treat her as badly as they do everybody else.
I think that's part of the game they're playing. The better you're known, the worse they treat you.
Well, I'll tell you this. Every since I've made this film, I have flown a lot. And every time I come back from someplace out of the country, they pull me aside. It never fails. Anybody else in my party, they don't bother with. Me, they always bother me. Bring me over to a secure area and privately inquire where I was, what I was doing, go through all my belongings every single time. I think I'm on the list of some. It's really annoying because I expect it now. It's like when they say, come over here, I'm ready to go because I know they're going to do it.
Well, Cross, our time is getting away from us. Let's tell people how they can get a hold of the movie Severe Visibility.
Sure, they can go to www.severevisibility.com, and there's a link on there that'll take you to CreateSpace, and they can also buy it on Amazon.com as well. So between those three, severevisibility.com takes you directly to CreateSpace, so they buy it through CreateSpace, and their service is great. They'll get it within a couple of days. And the same thing with Amazon.com. So it's easy to get.
Well, you've done the research. You did the film. You wrote it. You were even there at the Pentagon the day it happened. Looking back over it now, after all these years, what do you figure it was about? What was it all about, Alfie? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I think it was just a pretext to... I think it's a couple of things. I think it was very, very convenient to then start a war in Afghanistan and Iraq, which they did. and using that as the excuse, which was ridiculous. So we all found out, the world found out later it was a big lie. So if they thought, so now they know that they lie, which is good, because if they say, well, they lied about going into war and the pretext for a war, then maybe the pretext was a lie too, a big staged act. I think that was one reason, and coupled with that reason, I also believe it was a way to introduce the Patriot Act, which helps the New World Order create their agenda in basically changing the world to a one-world government, like with the Euro and what's going to happen with the Amero and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, they've done a pretty good job on the money, that's for sure.
They're absolutely correct. So I think that they had a two-prong motive for doing it, and I think the one was immediate, which was the wars, and the other one is a little bit more in coming, and I think another 9/11 will cinch it for them, and I think they'll be able to put the icing on their cake then.
Paul, thanks for being on. Paul Cross, director, writer, producer, Severe Visibility, that's the name of the movie. Pick it up.
Well, that would be nice.
Thanks, Paul, for being on a 9/11 show.
Good. Well,
and helping
so
us put the spotlight on the Pentagon. We'll be doing many that more shows. Great. Hopefully somebody will come forward. Thanks, Paul. Thank you for listening. I'm Jerry Pippen.
Thank you for joining us for more original Scepter Radio programming, where listening uncovers the world that's been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. For questions or comments, email us at scepterradionetwork@gmail.com or visit us on the web at www.scepterradionetwork.com. Until next time.